Hello, I'm Fern Cotton and this is Happy Place, the podcast that helps you tune out the noise of the outside world so you can find your true self. Today I'm chatting to someone who feels she's now being reintroduced to herself after years of detachment. It's Holly Willoughby.
Where I am in my age, where I am in my life, I feel like I'm getting more space and time back for me to kind of start looking at myself and who I am in this world and what my purpose is and how I feel about things. Like up until now, I think you're so busy with so many other things, you sort of start to lose a little pieces of who you are because so many little pieces are being spread into other areas.
Holly is obviously rarely off our screens. She fronts some of the most successful programmes on British TV. But recently, she's found herself wondering what's next. What happens when you reach the pinnacle of your career or tick off all the goals you had for your personal life? You know what? I've talked about this before. We've normalised perfection, you know, throughout pop culture, whether it's social media or just the media. And it's not particularly healthy for any of us. And when you're, well, when we're all collectively used to striving for excellence and achievements, it can be really hard to break that loop of constantly living in the future. So I really hope that you take something away from this chat with Holly today. Maybe for us all, we might learn to live a little more in the present.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, here it is. This is the show. Hi, Holly.
Hi. This is exciting. I feel like I've stepped into your world. I've listened to this so many times and now I'm in it.
You're in it. You are in the Happy Place zone. I'm very, very pleased, yet perhaps a little surprised that you wanted to do it because I know how private you can be. So what are the levels of discomfort right now?
I interview lots of people and always when you're sort of sitting on the other side of the sofa, as it would be in my world, or here on the other side of the microphone with you, it feels scary always because I think there's a sort of safety net and a barrier, isn't it, being the one that asks the questions because you haven't got to answer anything or say anything. So yeah, nervous, definitely.
Well, look, it's a very safe and loving space, as you know, yeah. As you've listened to it. So we're just going to, I've got lots of things that I want to talk to you about. And let's start with your new book that you've got out, Reflections. And you say in this book that this is the most personal project to date. And it feels like it, reading it. So what was that turning point for you where you thought, you know what, I'm ready to take a layer off, to show a little bit more of myself? What was that moment?
Oh, it's been a long time coming. Like, there's no doubt about that. I think I definitely always felt safer and more guarded by saying nothing and definitely keeping those layers very firmly zipped up and shut away. And I think for me, there was a bit of a, I don't know, I think where I am in my age, where I am in my life, where I am with my kids was definitely one reason. I feel like I'm getting more space and time back for me to kind of start looking at myself and who I am in this world and what my purpose is and how I feel about things. Like up until now, I think you're so busy with so many other things, you sort of start to lose a little pieces of who you are because so many little pieces are being spread into other areas. And I also think that I started to have the time and the space to look into different ways of coming back to myself a bit. And I think that the moment, and anybody who's listening to this that has kind of done any work on themselves, whether that be anything alternative or anything professional, the moment you start down that road, it's like it all starts opening up very, very quickly. And things that you didn't feel comfortable with talking about, you almost feel like it's your your duty, but not even your duty, it's your right to be able to speak about these things and to open up about these things and to want to share these things and to share them without feeling scared of the reaction, I think. And I think it's because you're actually peeling off layers that have been placed there by other people, possibly, by other people's opinions, possibly. And so once you peel all that back, you're sort of left with this very raw sense of self, this real kind of feeling of who you are. And it's suddenly not that scary anymore. And it doesn't really matter what people think and what people say. So it doesn't matter if you peel a layer off or not, because it's just all you're going to find is yourself there.
Yeah. And I, you know, you've had more pressure than most, because when you are in the public eye and to the level that you are, you know, that outside noise is huge. So that is a scary thing, because, you know, whatever any of us say in a space that is public, things can be taken out of context, yeah, or they can be misconstrued or misunderstood without the explanation. That's the lovely thing about a book, is that you just, you know, you go into extreme detail and it can't be taken out of context. But, you know, I get it. It took me, well, I don't think I was even thinking about talking about my real life back in the day. I mean, over the last sort of, I don't know, 5-6 years, obviously I've been explicitly honest about a lot, yeah, of things, and now I'm in a real comfort zone of doing it. But before that, I didn't even give it a thought, but it is a lovely feeling. And at the start of the book, you kind of open it up by saying you had this moment where you asked yourself the question, what's next? And you sort of invite the readers to do the same. You know, have you had that pivotal moment of what next? And I wonder what that feeling was. What was behind that? Was that just an inner itch for a new chapter?
It wasn't a search for something new. It was a search for something lost, I think. I think I asked myself, what's next? And kind of went, God, I actually don't know the answer. And then it was more like, well, why don't I know the answer? And it was because, like, life is very, very paved out for you, I think, to a certain extent. I mean, obviously, we all live different lives, but, you know, you go to school, you might go to college, you might go to university, you might get your first job, you might meet your partner, you might fall in love, you might get married, you might have children, they might go to school. And then what? And then suddenly this kind of mapped out map that's there, this kind of guide to life, sort of spits you out the other end, and you sort of go, oh God, I sort of ticked everything off. And it was lovely. And I'm not sitting here saying that I have any regrets over that, because I've done the most wonderful things. I have the most wonderful family, and I count myself as very lucky. But it is weird to come out the other side of that and go, oh my God, the list stopped. Now it's down to me. And I think that was where it was. It was kind of this, right, God, this is down to me. So what is next? And it's the first time I've sort of thought to myself, oh, I can actually choose. And I know you can always choose, but there is a level of expectation what comes next. And we get a bit, I don't know whether it's laziness or whether it's just we're programmed to do all those things, and they're lovely things, so why wouldn't you? But there is a decision now. There is a kind of, this next chapter is, I feel like I've got a handle on it more, and I'm more in control of what it could look like.
And do you think you found that professionally as well? Because, you know, you're top of your game. Like, what do you do next? Was that sort of running parallel with the lifestyle stuff that, you know, you'd got married, you'd had kids, and you own a house? Alongside that, you've got, oh my God, I'm climbing the ascent, but where
did it go?
You know, am I dead-ended? Have I reached the top?
Yeah, I think that's when you just have to think, well, actually, I think what happens there is you start to do things purely out of passion and a love for something. You know, I've been very fortunate in my career, and I love my job. I love working on This Morning. I feel very lucky to be in it. But sometimes you go, right, where do my passions lie now? And they all tie in, really, to what the book is talking about and my next move. And, you know, Wild Moon for me was is the website that I've launched. And it's, for me, that is a space. And it's like, I used to be really creative when I was at school. I used to do so much, you know, I loved art, I loved drama, I loved all these things. And you just stop, you become an adult and you completely stop. So there is part of me that I just was like, God, I need to reconnect with that person who I was. So creating Wild Moon and creating this space of things that I love and that I'm inspired by, and I hope that other people will be inspired by too, like, it just feels good. So I think that's the next move, is just keeping all these things bubbling that I'm already doing. But anything else that I add to that pile, it can only be because I feel a real passion and a drive to do it.
I think, as much as I don't like this word, I think as we grow older, we lose a sense of playfulness. Perhaps that comes back maybe towards the latter part of your life, but we lose a sense of playfulness because we are somewhat socially conditioned to tick things off of a list and move through what is structurally in place. Not for everybody, and it's not everyone's cup of tea, yeah. But many people will follow that route. And it's so interesting because I underlined something in this book that I'm reading today. I'm reading a book called The Artist's Way, which I should have read about 1,000 years ago.
Right.
And it's been on my list, and it's a beautiful book. And I had a copy at home, but I got re-gifted it, and I was like, I cannot ignore this book any longer. So every day I just read a few pages alongside whatever I'm reading at night. And this really plays into what we're talking about. And I kind of thought it would, hence why I've underlined it. And
okay.
It says, survival lies in sanity and sanity lies in paying attention. And I think that's what we stop doing. As kids, we're looking at worms and we're studying flowers, or, you know, we become really obsessed with the little tiny things in life. And when we grow up, all of that is sort of pointless.
Well, we pay attention, but we pay attention to what's going on tomorrow or the next day or the next day. Like, we very rarely pay attention to what's going on now. And like, sometimes when you do that, your life moves in fast forward because you're always chasing there and you never actually get there because then the next thing comes along. And I'm terrible for doing that. You know, my husband says to me, oh my God, you will organize the fun out of anything, won't you? And I'm like, I do. Like, I literally do. It's terrible. But I think it's because in order to keep plates spinning, you have to be organized and you have to chase and you have to do that. But I'm sort of really consciously trying to stop doing that. And like you just said, that noticing those small things and paying attention to small things and carving out time and space for me by doing certain things, I feel like I'm starting to get a handle on that again. And it sounds so simple, but it really does make a massive, massive difference.
Well, the next line, which is actually weirdly on the next page, but it completely relates directly. The capacity for delight is the gift of paying attention. And again, you know, none of us are doing that. We're just sort of, you know, unless we actually think about it and go, right, today I'm going to set intentions and this is how the day is going to go. Yeah. Or I'm going to really revel in the beauty when I go on a walk rather than being on my phone or whatever. And I think it's a really good thing that people hear you say it, someone that is top of their game, that the top is always replaceable because you'll look for the next top next top.
Always.
And you won't stop and go, oh, look at the lovely details of the bit that I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to the next bit. And that is perhaps because, you know, you haven't found that inner peace. You're looking for something elsewhere to harness a feeling of I'm okay. Maybe it's safety. I don't know.
Well, the other thing is it's complete and utter distraction. And, you know, I talk about this in the book as well, as a way, it's a way of detaching, actually. And detachment is a big thing that I've had to sort of discover about myself and learn the reasons why I do it. And to a certain extent, sometimes I think it can be very helpful and sometimes it can be very damaging. But there is definitely safety in ignoring how you're feeling right now. So we distract ourselves with these to-do lists and these things we've got to do because it's far safer. Like, if you can race and chase and be patted on the back of it as a person that can multitask, hey, amazing. Other people think I'm brilliant and I don't even have to look in and see what's really going on. So, you know, it works both ways. But to a point you said earlier as well, I have to be really careful because even in doing, like, trying to focus and trying to stay in the now, because I'm the type of person that kind of goes, oh, I have to be really good at this. I have to be really good at this. I start to overthink even this safe space, the safe feeling, this right. And now I'm just going to focus on making myself a cup of tea in the morning. Like, I have to be really careful that I don't start overanalyzing even that, because I've just got a tendency to do that. That's what I do. So it comes out in all areas of my life. And I just have to be aware of it and sort of just to be a bit more, I just have to let those things go a bit and be a bit more nonchalant. Like, that's what I need to be in life.
It's tricky though, because I think when you're used to working in that way and you're used to excellence and achievement, it's hard to break that loop and to give yourself a break. It's giving yourself a break of going, it doesn't matter if I'm a bit sloppy today. It doesn't matter if this isn't the best it can be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that also, you know, that's played into on a societal level because we're so used to now seeing so-called perfection or so-called excellence or whatever it is, that it's been normalised. And it wasn't like that 50 years ago. But now all of a sudden, you know, we've normalised perfection and none of us really know what to do about it because we're all going, oh my God, I'm meant to be perfect. I don't feel it. I'm talking for myself here. I certainly don't feel perfect ever. Yeah. I just sort of stumble through things the best I can. But I think that's the danger, that on a societal level, it's become so normalised that we view perfection.
No, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. And often things that are perfect can be completely and utterly dull. Like if somebody stands up and does a perfect kind of reading or a speech, you're like, I wish they'd messed up a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly look...
Or the things that come out of that, the mistakes. The mistakes are always the most interesting
thing. No, we know that from this morning. Like, they're the bits that go every... You know, people want to see that stuff.
Thank the Lord.
But, you know, I look to people like, I don't know, David Bowie back in the day, who, you know, he had crooked teeth and, you know, mismatched coloured eyes. And he was just in his flow creating. Perfect wasn't on his radar. It was just his channel. And we've gone into a weird era of that. But look, I want to just reverse a little bit and talk about this. You know, you do a whole chapter on detachment. So obviously this has been a big thing for you. And I didn't know this. I didn't know that you had this period of life where you felt a disconnect, a detachment from your everyday. And I wonder, what did that feel like? You know, did you feel numb? Is that the feeling of detachment?
It's funny because I'm sort of talking about it looking back, because I think the best way I can describe it is, you know, like when you're driving a car or you're trying to get to somewhere and you suddenly get there and you go, oh my God, my brain was just thinking about so many different things. I mean, I got here and I was obviously safe because I know the route, but I completely switched off, but my body knew what to do. And I think to a certain extent, I'd been doing that in other areas of my life. And no, it wasn't like some big, terrible, oh my God, I've missed out on so much. It wasn't as extreme as that. But what it did do, I think, was took the edge off things for better and for worse. So you kind of function in this safe middle ground. And I'd even find myself never really getting like particularly angry about stuff or particularly upset about things. Like things just kind of, you know, it is almost like a numbing thing. Like you just sort of didn't let too much in bother you or not bother you, and you just kind of exist. And I wonder whether that's just quite a safe place, because if you stay in that sort of middle lane and you're not getting too bothered about stuff and you're not getting too whatever about stuff, no one's getting too offended by what you're saying. So it's all quite safe.
Does that stop you leaning into the joy as well, though, as well as the anger and the sorrow?
Probably. I mean, probably. Again, like, this isn't as extreme as I'm probably making it sound, but it was just, I just notice starting to reconnect with stuff. I go, oh my God. And I'm more so feeling the anger than feeling the joy. I think joy is easier to access because it feels good. But I think you shy away from the bad stuff. That's where I was detaching more. I think the other end of the spectrum, a little bit maybe, but not massively. But that other end, the kind of ugly end, the end that you don't want to look at, that was the end that I was like, not having any of that. Don't look over there. Don't want to look over there. Look, just, let's just all be nice. Let's just get all there. Anyway, and obviously that's ridiculous because you can't do that. But what's lovely is I've begun to really enjoy anger. Like, anger's great.
I love anger.
Like, anger's a really
so good.
Good and powerful emotion. And I think from going from something that I was so terrified about, I was like, hold on a second. Anger can be really useful. Like, I suddenly discovered how I really felt about everything, because there would be this hot flash of like, anger, and I'd be like, oh wow, I really do hate that. That's amazing. Or like things where I'd be going, oh, what's really the problem with this? What's at the root of the problem? And suddenly in 2 seconds, you'd be shouting and saying something. You'd be like, oh my God, there it is. There it is. There we go. I don't need to go and, you know, meditate on that for a month. I don't need to go and see a therapist. It was like, it was there and all its glory. And I was like, there you are. You've just told me.
Oh yeah, you want to see me run around the park while I'm angry. I am Usain Bolt. Like, I am channeling that rage. I think if you harness anger, it can
probably
be
forward.
Really amazing. Yeah, and you know what? Anger I've never struggled with. Like, anger is always a little bit under the surface for me. It doesn't take me much to access that. And I don't know why. That's just, I have the propensity to go there and I can be quite fiery. But there are certainly other things that I've probably suppressed sorrow more than anything about certain situations in my life, time periods of my life, where I haven't really either mourned the loss of something or a part of me. I haven't allowed myself to. I've seen it as self-indulgent or ridiculous. And I'm getting back in touch with that, which feels really good as well. But I wonder, with that suppressed anger, you know, it's in there. You can't, as you've said, you can't contain it. It's not, there's no possibility that you could contain any emotion.
I was really good at it, though.
We have to have a fluidity. Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Like, but it's in there. But how, you know, did that manifest in other ways? Was there something else that helped with the sort of counterbalance of you keeping it in?
I know you'd have thought so, wouldn't you? Like, you think, God, it's got to come out somewhere. But I think I was really good at it. Like, I think my self-defense and self-protection mechanism was incredible. Like, I actually think that was probably my greatest skill, but to my detriment in some way. But it's okay, because actually it didn't come out in a way that has caused any damage particularly. I think it's interesting to look at now and unpack it. Like, I'm really, it's really telling, and I'm glad I've done it now. I'm really glad I've done it now. But also, like, I'm not, I know why it had to happen. And I'm kind of, it's like that old magic that your body and brain does that we're not in control of. Like,
it's a coping mechanism.
It did a really good thing. It did a really good thing. So I don't want to sit here and go, oh my God, it was awful, because it wasn't actually. And I think these things happen to get you through something. But once you come out the other side, I think then it's what you do next with it. And what I'm doing next with it is leaning into it and going, okay. But I'm very proud of my head and my body for knowing what to do. It's like when you get pregnant or you're going to labor, like, your body just takes over. And sometimes I think we need to, for a little control freak like me, when you're reminded of that, sometimes that there is something going on innately that's bigger than your sort of conscious decision-making head, it's a nice reminder just to let go and just go with it.
Yeah, and also to, I think, be kinder to ourselves, because I can certainly notice patterns of a similar nature in my own past where, you know, I've shut down certain parts of me, or I've had to stop doing something. And I've got the propensity to really beat myself up about it. Like, why can't you cope? Why are you doing this? But actually, it is a coping mechanism. Yeah. And in times where you're going through shit, you do whatever you've got to do to survive it and get through it. And, you know, things will happen, like you've said, without thought. They are mechanisms, and, you know, we can replace them, we can remove them, but, you know, we don't have to beat ourselves up for
not when you're going
getting through tough
it.
Times.
Like, I think when you're going through something, you just got to do whatever feels right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you have to stay with that forever, or that that has to become some overriding power or the focus of everything or all of those things. Like, I think that's where you can make changes, I think.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so you had this sort of seminal moment where you were in Australia doing Get Me Out of Here, and you had a bit more time and space because you weren't in the home, and you decided to go and see a kinesiologist, and you write about this in the book.
Yeah.
How did that help, and at what pace? You know, at what point did you think, oh, something's shifting here?
I mean, this was kind of the start of it, really. I mean, I've always had an interest in alternative things anyway. Even when I was younger, a very good friend of mine is a Reiki master, and she attuned me to Reiki like when I was like 17. So, like, I've had that kind of draw to things like this. And again, as life takes over, it's something you should shut down and ignore, you know, that you kind of go, oh, I haven't got time to think about that sort of thing. But it's been nice to revisit it. But yes, Australia was, it was a kind of a little gift, really, because A, I wasn't meant to be there. B, I was on the other side of the world. I was without my children and without my husband for 2 weeks, I think, before they came out. And I had this apartment and I had nothing to do apart from look after myself. And I was in the land of the alternative life. And I was like, right, I'm going to do everything. I'm just going to dive on in here and see what feels good. And I had some weird experiences and I met some wonderful people. But yeah, there was this lady in particular who was, you know, a kinesiologist, but she was more than that. I mean, there was seriously something else going on there, because she definitely unlocked something. And I know that people are very wary of people maybe going in and having an unlocking moment in, say, something that's not necessarily the NHS wouldn't recommend. You know, there is a professional route to go down with your psychologist and your therapy, and that, oh, there is an alternative route. Now, for me, they worked beautifully alongside each other, but there was this moment, and it was, yeah, it was bloody terrifying, if I'm going to be completely honest. It wasn't a nice feeling. Like, it wasn't like a eureka, hallelujah moment. It wasn't nice, but I knew that it was the beginning of something. And so, yeah, that was it, really. That was kind of the beginning. And what started off as scary, I now love. And I don't think I'm never going to be at that point where you go, oh yeah, that's all over, I did that, now I'm fixed. It's like, even if somebody could go, oh, I'll wave a magic wand and fix you, I'd be like, no way. Like, I'm enjoying this. Like, I don't want to be done. I just want to keep digging down and finding more, because it's like, it's really nice to get to know yourself. Like, I feel like I'm meeting myself, like my adult self.
It's so true, and it's endless. It goes on forever. That's why I'm more excited about life now than ever, because I can see that it's never ending. I'm never going to reach, you know, that sort of amazing moment, the pinnacle of life, where I am complete. Like, it's not, I know it's not going to happen. And I'm excited to go on the undulating journey. Not a fan of that word either, but not sure what else to say.
There is no other word to replace journey.
Exploration. Really exploration. I'm excited about that. So look, let's talk about this, you meeting you. I'm deeply fascinated about this, because it's definitely something I've experienced myself, and, you know, in a very different way to you. You know, I've talked about this a whole load on this podcast, yeah, and in other spaces, but I had a moment where my life was sort of cracked in two, not in a great way. There was no good bit about it, and it was bloody horrible. Mm-hmm. But it sort of shattered an illusion for me completely, and lots of stuff that I used to believe in didn't make sense anymore. And the way that I thought of myself didn't make sense anymore. Mm-hmm. So I certainly had to meet the real me at all stages of my life, the bits of me I didn't like and still don't particularly like, but I'm working with. And it's a really cool, difficult challenge. And again, you know, one that is endless. And, you know, mm-hmm, we're the same age. It perhaps is also something to do with age and growth.
This is the good thing about getting older, by the way, all you young ones listening to this. This is like the joy of getting older, is that you go,
yeah.
I'm not scared to look in. And I think for me, Fern, when it came to trying to work out exactly who this person is, who am I? Sounds crazy, but it's true.
No.
It was like I had to challenge the set of beliefs I was living by. Mm. I was like, right, okay, I'm feeling mega guilty now. Why? What's making me feel guilty? Is it that I'm working too much? Is it that I'm, like, the whole working mum guilt thing, for example? And you go, oh my God, I'm a working mum. I can't drop my kids off at school in the morning because I'm always at work. And I had this thing that I just thought, oh my God, people are going to think that. And actually what I pulled it down to was thinking, people must think that I don't love my kids because I go to work. And I was thinking that if I actually break that down to what I'm telling myself, that's mad, because of course I love my kids. I love my kids with every ounce of my being. Like, so why am I feeling guilty? Because I know I'm going to work because I enjoy going to work. And it's got no correlation to how much I love my kids. So two things shouldn't even be said in the same sentence. But I'm believing a set of beliefs that I think other people are feeling. So that was like, forget that. Like, what?
That's
am I
an
doing?
Ancestral that's, hangover. That's
mad. That's like complete madness. So it's kind of like snipping at strings of balloons filled with beliefs that don't belong to me. They're somebody else's. So, you know, that was just an example of one thing, but there were many, many of those moments where I was like, whose beliefs are these? Are they mine? And it's hard to work out. That's the thing. It's hard to hear that voice. It's hard to find that voice, because you go, are they mine? And you go, I don't know, are they? Are they? And quite often you end up sort of, sometimes you can't, you don't even know what are your beliefs and what are the beliefs of somebody. Like, I'll listen to a podcast with someone, you go, yeah, they're right. You know, God, did you hear that person on Happy Place? That's exactly how I feel. And then you listen to them and goes, oh no, now I feel like that. And sometimes there are two, like listening to information and educating yourself and growing by having all this input is wonderful, but you have to reserve a little piece of you for you.
We have to have our intuition intact. Otherwise, we're going to be untethered to the max. We're going to be literally pinging because we are bombarded with information all day, and we can access any information anytime we want all day in varying mediums.
Yeah.
And if we don't get that intuition, we're fucked because we will just literally imbibe everything. And then you're left with a mixing pot, as you say, of everything. And let's also not underestimate fame because, you know, being in the public eye is... It looks glamorous and amazing and whatever, but it's deeply confusing because you have exterior noise all day, every day from complete strangers. And I actually found recently, I was watching, I don't know if you've seen it, Ruby Wax's brilliant show. Did you see it?
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, I love her. I'm completely besotted with her. And her looking back at those times, not only sort of dissecting the guests, but also dissecting how she went into those situations and dissecting her own ascent, because she was, you know, certainly for us growing up in the 90s, she was everything. She was this amazing, vivacious character who was just going and doing what she wanted. But she was so honest in saying, when you're at that level of fame, you have to almost create a character to cope with it.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment where you get lost and you don't know the difference between the character and the you bit. And I wonder if that's playing into this somewhat.
Do you know, it's funny. I saw her say that and I thought, that's interesting. But it's weird for me because in the same way that kind of people will say the silence is deafening, for me, that kind of deafening noise of fame is silence.
Right.
Because it almost cancels itself out for me. Because there's so much of it. I almost can't hear it because it's like a wall.
A great coping mechanism again. A great natural coping mechanism.
Basically I've detached from it.
Yeah, you can.
So I haven't come.
Let it go.
But I'm okay with detaching from that. Yeah. That's fine. Like that's what I mean. Like the detachment can be great
in the right areas,
and I don't know whether in 5 years I'll go, oh, I really need to engage with that bit because actually that plays quite a big bit in my life. But I don't know yet because I'm just stepping through life, taking on one challenge at a time. But for me, keeping it silent works.
Wow.
Like I will turn the volume up on you, my friends, my family, like that I want to hear, that I want to take in, but not that. I can't.
Yeah.
How can you deal with that amount of stuff?
Well, I don't. I can't. Like, I literally can't do all the stuff I used to do. And some of it is to do with that. Some of it is because I'm still dealing with a lot of healing with panic attacks and that's still stuff that I live with. So I can't. So I'm. I guess from afar, I am fascinated at these coping mechanisms because I cannot cope with it, so much so that I've had to remove myself from it. You know, and this is my little, I'm in my little shed. I've got my little headphones on. I'm talking to people that I want to talk to. I feel super safe here. And I feel safe doing my radio show because it's my little space again, and writing my books because I'm just being a little nerd on my laptop. But for me to step into that again, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but right now, there's no way I could set foot in that space. And for my body, this overrides intellect, for my body to feel safe, my body goes into absolute shock. And I don't want to. And I'm not even going to push myself right now. Because, you know, well, part of me thinks, and I can do that. I have a right to try and do it. But then the other part goes, this just walk down this path for a bit and see what happens. But I'm deeply intrigued at the coping mechanisms because you have this every day. You're on TV every day. You walk down the street, people are shouting your name, blah, blah, blah. I'm deeply intrigued at the coping mechanisms in place because whatever they are, they're working. They're really working. And I'm sure it's a plethora of things, a support network, etc.
Yeah.
But it's really cool that you've found those tools to deal with it.
To be honest, Fern, I've never massively engaged with it, I think, as well. Even from the get-go, I think, like, I come home and I shut the door and it's gone. Like, I don't rethink about it. I don't think about it. I don't sit in it. It doesn't worry me. It doesn't bother me. I'm very grateful and I love what I do. But And I know that this is probably very difficult for a lot of people to understand, because people go, she's absolutely lying, but I really, really mean this wholeheartedly. And I don't want this to happen, but if it did happen, if it all switched off tomorrow, I'd be okay, because my real life and my real love and my real passion is when that door shuts. And that won't ever change, because that's mine. So all the other stuff that goes on, it's like the cherry on the top. And I don't want it to go, because I love it. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm very, very lucky and very fortunate. But I think if something was to happen to Dan or the kids or my family environment or my friends, the bottom would fall out of my world and I couldn't cope. Like, I could not cope. That would be me gone. The rest of the stuff, it's important, but it's not important to me and my being, if you like.
Yeah, and I guess that will strengthen even more so the more you, without sounding cheesy, meet with yourself. Because the deeper the relationship you have with yourself, the quieter and quieter that stuff gets. And I'm looking forward to that because, you know, I'll be honest, I still do find outside noise distracting. And the thing that I don't like is if I'm misunderstood by people, because I really know what my intentions are and I really know what my mission is in life, and I don't like being misunderstood.
But then why are you worried? Like, not like take my example as the thing. Like, if somebody's saying, if you know that, why are you listening to what they're saying?
I can't, like, why is that getting bear in? The thought. I mean, maybe some of it is sort of a traumary type hangover, but I can't deal with people having the wrong idea about me. It's something that I do a lot of work on, and I find it deeply. And again, you know, like, I was watching from afar when you've got every person in the press saying that you and Philip are having a tough time, and meanwhile you're great friends and there was no arguments. And I thought, I wouldn't cope with that. There's no way. I would be going, hello, we're best friends, leave me alone. Like, I wouldn't cope. I don't have the inner strength to shut shop and go, oh yeah, think what you like. I'm not there yet. No way.
Wow, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, it is, don't get me wrong, like, it is difficult. And I mean, that was a particularly difficult time, of course, for many reasons. But I think, and I remember having this conversation with Phil at the time, and it was like, but we know, like I have to believe that as long as you know inside, and you know the truth, you know your truth, then everything's got to be okay. It has to be. And I have to hold on to that. Like, I can't start questioning that.
No, I get it. Otherwise, it would be, you couldn't confront that every day if you didn't have that coping mechanism in place.
It's be exhausting.
Absolutely exhausting. So let's talk about inner and outer beauty, because that is the theme of the book and a lot of the other work that you're doing. And you say that you can't have outer beauty without inner beauty. And I think this is so interesting, because that seemingly is the problem that we're dealing with on a big level at the moment, probably near exclusively with social media. I know it also lies in other parts, but on social media, there is so much acute focus on outside beauty and almost none on inner beauty. I know it's harder to perhaps sort of depict or illustrate inner beauty on social media in that way, but still, our focus is still just pinpoint outer beauty. And we could be throwing all of our likes and follows at people that aesthetically look incredible, but they could be a right old cow. We don't know what's going on in their world or what their inner beauty's like. And I wonder, you know, what do we do? We need to pull focus on that, surely, and try and marry the two for that concept to work.
Well, that's my entire point, really. And I feel like, you know, the first half of the book, obviously, a lot of these things we've been talking about is what comes up. And I think that's kind of laying your foundations, really, getting your foundation for self right. And then actually, when it comes to outer beauty, certain things that you thought were important before are less important now. Because, like you say, on social media, there seems to be a one-stop shop of beauty, a certain way of looking, which everything feeds into, everybody buys into. It's kind of dominated by youth, I guess, which, yes, is beautiful in its innocence and it is wonderful and to be celebrated, but it's not my only version of beauty. For me, there are many, many different things of being beautiful. And I think the key is that in order for that to stop, we have to celebrate difference, and we have to celebrate all the individuality in different quirks of anyone around. And there's only one way to do that, and that is to fully and totally accept those within ourselves. Because if you can't love your wonky teeth, if you can't love your nose that may not be a perfect kind of little tiny button nose that someone's had surgery to reduce.
I've got one of those characterful guys. That's what I've got.
Exactly. If you can't embrace your individuality and those bits of you, then how can you embrace that in other people? All you're going to do is feed into this monstrous kind of creation of this paper doll society of everybody coming out looking the same way.
Yeah, but it's hard, isn't it? Like, you know, because I think it goes even beyond that. You know, I've made peace with my dad's nose that I have on my face.
You've got a beautiful
nose.
It.
I'm into it. I like it. But there are bits of me that I really struggle with, and they're nothing to do with my body. You know, there are some bits where you look in the mirror and go, oh, for fuck's sake, you know, I've literally got, my stomach is made of tissue paper. I'll tick all the cliches there. But mine is so much deeper. Mine is going into past regrets and things I've said that I shouldn't have and actions I've done that I know haven't come from a benevolent place back in the day or whatever. We've all got these. I find that level of acceptance so hard. Like that is the stuff that I do a lot of therapy on, is making peace with those things that have happened or past versions of me, integrating the two, etc. I think that's really hard. Like, where are you with that?
God, maybe I'm just a bit more brutal with things like that. But I think that all of those things that you've just said about yourself there, like when each of those things happened, I imagine you learned something from those, didn't you? Like you must have come away.
In the moment where I'm berating myself, that goes out the window.
But you must, all of those, like whatever you, if you describe it as a mistake or things that happened, you learn from that. And if you learn from that, you've grown from that. So you don't need to integrate. I don't feel like you need to integrate anything. You just have to know that, like, no one's going to get through this life unscathed. No one is. But there's no point dragging stuff like that behind you, because you're going to limit where you're going.
But I think we do it on such a subconscious level. Like, we had Mel Robbins on the podcast, and we were talking about this. And when you look at yourself in the mirror, and not in a way where you're, like, putting makeup on or whatever, but you look at yourself and you're like, whoa, that's me.
Yeah.
And in those moments, you will recognize that you are subconsciously carrying 40 years of shit around with you or whatever. Yeah. And I definitely do that. I do that in, you know, I'm very quick to judge myself and very quick to criticize myself. This is all stuff that I work on. But I'll bring all of it in. If I'm having a bad day, I'll bring the last, you know, something from 20 years ago. I'm bringing that into today. I'll do it all the time.
Can you not rewrite the narrative slightly? And I'm not like flippantly trying to like brush this away, but like, because I've like, trust me, I've done this. And for me, a lot of this, it's particularly as you're getting older. And I think when you hit your 40s, things change quite rapidly, actually. You know, we're sort of heading towards that kind of menopausal time.
Yay.
Skin is changing, hair is changing, you know, body's changing. Yeah. Even having had a baby, you know, your shape of your body completely changes. I think that it's really important in those moments to kind of, rather than look down and go, oh my God, you know, look, everything's changing. I'm getting older. I'm getting more wrinkled. Oh my God, my tits around my knees. You know, instead of looking down, kind of, you sort of got to look up with it and go, God, you know, my body was able to carry a baby and my boobs breastfed to three children and they were fine. Well, two and a half, Jessica was useless. I was useless. Couldn't quite do it. And then you've got to go, like, you know, I'm my face is starting to sag and my eyes are bloodshot and the rest of it, but like, I'm healthy and I'm okay. And getting older is like a privilege because not everybody else gets to be here. And I don't know. I mean, you must have it with honey, like having a daughter. I'm very aware of like the example I set now in this stage, because she's definitely, you know, Belle's 10. So she is old enough now to be watching me. And I want to conduct myself in a way that when she gets to this stage, it's like I'm clearing the pathway for her. That's how I feel about many things, not just about outward image, but you know, this is what we're talking about now. But yeah, I feel I have a responsibility there to do this in a way that is a positive experience for all of us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely trying. I just think maybe some people lean more into, I don't know if it's even optimism and pessimism, but being able to move through life without bringing the past in more so. I don't know. And it's, you know, I think we've all got strengths and weaknesses, and I know mine certainly are there and sometimes shouting quite loudly, and often they are linked to the past. And I think I probably wouldn't have panic attacks if I didn't do it. They probably wouldn't have any potency because I would just go, no, you don't need to do this.
But you can't escape your past.
I'm not
like
there.
That's not what I'm saying. Like, you can't, it's not like I'm detaching and running away. Like, you cannot do that. Like, you have to
make peace with it.
You do. And that's not easy. And that's not easy. And there are many different levels of what people go through, different things. And it's not easy.
No.
And it never, I don't think you ever make full peace with it, but you can turn the volume down, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, actually, I think more often than not now, if something does come up, I'll just end up talking about it on here or writing about it. So I'll get it out. I think you just need to get it out of you. Yeah, you've got to get it out and get it moving and whatever. So let's talk about, you mentioned this a while back in the conversation, but it was an interesting chapter again on control. And I think having talked about a lot of coping mechanisms today, I think often control is used in the same way, because if I'm not feeling safe in a certain situation, and it's not like a scary situation, it'll be something that's very mundane for other people, but it somewhat triggers me, I will go into absolute panicky control freak mode. And if there's, and it could be on a very again, aesthetic level, it could be on quite a visceral level, like an inner, an itch of feeling. I'm trying to get control over all of that shit. And I'm reaching for safety. Do you think that lies beneath your drive to have control in life?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think when you feel like you're doing something, you feel like you're in control of it somehow. Like, I'm a really bad flyer because I swear to God it's because I'm not flying that plane.
Yeah. I heard Dawn French once say when she's in a plane, she has to think it stays in. She's using her brain to make it stay in the air. Like, she's literally thinking it afloat. Like, you're going to stay in the air.
Genuinely, I get that. I get that. I totally get that. Like, I'm not very good at relinquishing any control anywhere. However, what I'm really trying to do is just focus on me and... Like, I just need to make my world smaller, because if you try and control absolutely everything that's going on around you, it's an impossibility. Like, that is not happening. You can't do it. What you can do is you can just focus on yourself, and you can just focus on this and what this feels like. And like, if I'm feeling out of control, or if things are getting too much, or I feel like that thing is just, I can feel it bubbling. Like, I literally, it's just a case of shutting my eyes and just going in and going, right, what's going on in there? I'm just going to take a few deep breaths, and I'm just going to feel how I'm feeling. And I'm just going to consciously try and take my heart rate down a bit. And I'm just going to calm down, because the moment I start trying to micromanage every single person in this room, this is going to go stratospheric, off the charts, out of control, and no one wins. So it's bringing it back. I think this is the thing that I really want to stress in this book. It's like bringing it back, just bringing it back to you and focusing on yourself. And knowing that, you know, that you have this power within you that was there all along, and you just need to focus on it and harness it. And it is there, and it does help, and it does work.
Well, we're all out of control, aren't we? None of us have any control over anything. The only thing we potentially can control is our reaction to the stuff that's happening around us. That's the only thing we can make a choice about, is I'm going to react in this way, I'm going to react in that way. The rest of it, we have to let go. Letting go is so hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is when you're a control freak like me.
Yeah.
It sounds like you are too. So I think
hugely. Like, I know I am, but it's in certain pockets where I really don't feel safe.
Yeah.
And at other times I can let go because I feel pretty held and like it's okay. And that's then quite exciting. And maybe that is then when you can lean into whatever happens in that moment. Mm. But when there's a lack of safety, and for me, again, that for me is like, okay, one example, a very mundane thing for a lot of people, sleep.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily feel a safety in that portion of my life. Will I just naturally fall asleep? Will I have to wake up in the night? Will this ruin the next day? There's so many variables that I could easily be you know, thrown. You know what? I'm cool with all of this. I'm learning loads. I'm exploring. Mm. It's all part of the fun. I'm not going to give myself a hard time about it. But that's where I get very controlling, and I have to have my own exact pillow that is the same pillow. I have to have the exact eye mask. I have to have one earplug. It's crazy. Yeah. It sounds crazy. But if I'm controlling that situation, at least I think I know this has worked before.
Yeah. You're doing something.
And again,
it's
a coping mechanism, isn't it? It's a coping mechanism. And I think, you know, the thing that I'm getting the most from this conversation is we've got to just find our own coping mechanisms, and whatever they are, there's no right or wrong. There's no like textbook coping mechanism here. You know, you might be able to read about them in books and take heed of them, but actually they're probably intuitive, and they'll be happening without you even realizing it anyway.
And whatever coping mechanisms we have, annoyingly, get flushed down the toilet whenever there is fear around, and fear is a bastard. So we need to try and...
Fear is the worst.
We just need to like be aware of that and go, right, we're not going to get away from fear. There's going to be moments where we fearful, but it's in those moments where you have to dig really, really deep and really, really go, right, now I need my coping mechanisms more than anything, because this is going to make me react and fall into all those pitfalls that I've been falling in all this time. But I just need to really hold on to these things that I know work for me and use them even more.
Or if you're feeling in the right frame of mind, look beneath the fear. If you're, you know, you've got to be in the right frame of mind to take a deep look at it. But if you look at what that is, so say I use my sleep example again, right? Why the hell am I so scared about, or why do I feel so unsafe is the right terminology in that environment? And if I keep digging and digging, I mean, if I kept digging, it would probably be a self-worth related thing. I'm going to be a pile of shit tomorrow at work, and then I'll fall even further into insecurity or whatever. There'll be some deep layer for everything. So I think, you know, we can rely on our coping mechanisms, but also it's super interesting if you feel in the right headspace to go, I wonder what's underneath that, because it's never really the thing that we think we're scared of.
What can you
It's
learn?
Something on a subterranean level down here that you haven't explored. And that, again, if you're in the right frame of mind, can be quite cool.
Yeah, shine a light into those cracks. See what you find.
Yeah, what do you think, what's beneath your fear? Do you know what it is?
I do. I know what it is, but it's, well, it's not something that is easy to talk about, and it's not something that I'm there yet with either. I think sometimes for me, things like that can be distracting for others, and people will focus on that rather than the actual message and point of what I want to talk about, which is, you know, how you can move past it and how there is a way. So I think pinpointing those things is key, 100%. Like, I think you have to, in order to be able to let the healing begin.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, I'm very boundaried. Although talk about a lot of this stuff, I too have big things that I haven't made peace with that I won't talk about.
Yeah.
And it's very healthy to have these boundaries because unless you are completely at peace with situations or feelings, it's not good. This is the important message, because again and again we hear, you know, and even part of the point of this podcast is that telling stories and listening is super important and amazing and can be really liberating, but only when you feel in the right space to do so and in the right frame of mind. And, you know, these conversations don't have to be big and public. We are, because this is hopefully helpful for other people. But for people listening, if there are things that you want to talk about, but you feel, you know, deep pain with, I certainly have that. You need to pick the right person or the right professional, whoever it might be. It doesn't have to be a huge discussion with, you know, a group of people or whatever. It's got to be right for you and on your terms. And I think that's a really important point to make whenever we're talking about stuff like this and getting beneath the sort of reactions and the emotions of what are playing out.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, how fascinating.
Oh, man. I mean,
We've dissected so many bits and things I didn't know about you, and it's very cool that you're going on this explorative journey, and it's exciting to sort of see where that goes and what happens next.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been lovely.
Holly, thank you for spending time with me today. I really hope that might have given you the confidence to start thinking about where you might want to begin your own journey of self-discovery if you haven't already started on it. It's a long road and it's hard work every day, but fruitful nonetheless. I'm constantly up for exploring life to try and work out who the hell I am. Or perhaps the goal is to accept that I'll never know, and that's absolutely fine. Whatever that self-exploration, it will look different for all of us. And the important thing to remember is it will be at your speed. There's no rush. There's no winner at the end of this. I think it's meant to be fun and exciting along the way, so I've been told. Another place to find supportive words of encouragement is on our Instagram page. Do follow it if you need a boost. We only put beautiful, positive stuff up there. Things that will hopefully inspire you, that might get you thinking, that you might want to send to a friend. At Happy Place Official. So do come say hello there. And make sure you're back here with me and another gorgeous guest next week by following this podcast for free on your podcast app of choice. Until next week, thank you again to Holly, to the producer, Anushka Tate. Thank you, Anushka. And to you for listening. I love you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.